Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. My name's Andy Mitten, and I'm currently walking outside the main stand of Bayer Leverkusen's Bay Arena. There's 2 hours to kick off. It's close to zero, it's really cold, and the fans are streaming towards the stadium. I've come here from Cardiff. I got a train after the game on Sunday to London, stayed overnight, then I got another train to Brussels and another one to Cologne, where I met the Cologne footballer, Ramon Galobart. And then I went to Dortmund to watch Borussia Dortmund against Napoli in the Champions League. And then I went to Dusseldorf, and then I've come south to Leverkusen. It's a city of 180,000 people, and they're not one of the historic teams in German football. They're owned by Bayer. It's a company team. But they've been around at the top level for a long time now, and they are treated with more credibility than a Hoffenheim, who just sort of came on with new money a couple of years ago. One second, someone shouting me. That was a man asking me for a ticket. Tickets are hard here. I wouldn't say they're quite as hard as in 2002, when they were going for £300 or £400 and 1,500 United fans were locked out. But then this isn't the semi-final either. And the other factor is that they've expanded the stadium since then. I'm walking down a passageway behind the home end, and I'm going to try and get a ticket. There's close to 2,000 United fans coming, and they're standing in rail seats. So we're going to look at the rail seats as part of this podcast and speak to some people. And also, I'll speak to Ramon, the Cologne player, and also go to Dortmund as well, where the atmosphere was truly special.
I'm in the Westfalenstadion, the home of Borussia Dortmund. The game's just kicked off against Napoli. The ground normally holds 81,000, and it's sold out every single week. It costs €15 to buy a ticket to stand on the famous South Tribune, the South Terrace, which holds 26,000. It's the biggest terrace in world football. It's even cheaper if you buy a season ticket. It works out at about £10.40 per game. To get a normal seat, you'll pay between €33 and €50. But coming to the ground, I was struck by how working class the club is, how firmly in touch with the club's roots Borussia Dortmund is, by how much power the fans have. There's about 3,000 Napoli fans over to my right. They're not the shy and retiring types themselves. It's a fantastic football stadium. It's one of the best in the world. It's a true football stadium. I first came here in 93 with a load of lads from Manchester, just travelling around Europe a bit, and Borussia Dortmund reached the UEFA Cup final, and then it came again in 97 with United, and it wasn't a great night. Sorry, just getting close to a goal-scoring chance there. But that 1997 was notable, I suppose, because the atmosphere was so good in the United end. Since then, this stadium has almost doubled in size. They do a lot of things right. I know there's a bit of a loving with German football at the moment, and I know that invokes cynicism, but it's absolutely brilliant. There's only one fault here in Dortmund. I've just been surrounded by 62,000 people. The lower capacity is because it's all seated for European games. Singing "You'll Never Walk Alone." I'm not a happy man. Dortmund have been given a penalty. So if they score, you'll be able to hear what it sounds like when Borussia Dortmund score a goal at home in a big Champions League match, in front of the Sud Tribune.
If you have seen it or haven't, the old man is
okay. Yeah! Nah, United's better. Thank you. performed 3-1 against Napoli and looked strong for going through. The following day, headed to Dusseldorf and then on to Leverkusen.
It's 5 hours before kick-off and I've come to the UEFA Youth League game between United and Leverkusen. Leverkusen have just scored. There's about 10 minutes left. Both teams are down to 10 men. Leverkusen have just scored to make it 3-1. There's a crowd of about 400 people here. And the UEFA Youth League is not quite replaced, but sort of replaced the Next Gen League, which had been running for the last couple of years, but they couldn't get enough money to continue it. With UEFA organising this one, it's a much bigger tournament, and the under 19 teams of every club in the group stage play against each other a few hours before the game. It's a good idea for the players because they get to experience travel, long hours in hotel rooms, being away from home. They get to play against different styles of football. They travel with the first team, which is a good or bad thing. Barcelona recently stopped their players travelling with the first team because they were saying that they were getting a little bit a big time. And there's a big... it's kicking off. It's kicking off. There's a lot of... there's on the field, not off the field. There's quite a few United fans who've come along to watch this. With Eric van den Polder, who's a well-known United fan from Rotterdam.
He's fucking put a can out for honestly.
Eric, you watch United around the world?
Yes, I do. So do you.
I see you at all these different places. How many countries have you seen United playing?
35 or 36, I think.
Why United?
70s. I grew up, young boy, watched them on Dutch TV. And this was when Tommy Doherty in the Red Army, I saw them on TV and I was hooked. And I remember watching them against Derby County, the semi-final, on TV. And I said to my dad, that's where I want to go. And 2 years later, in 78, he took me. So.
And your dad was a very well-respected Dutch journalist who passed away recently.
Yeah, he did,
and
yeah.
I had the privilege of meeting him before he passed away. And he used to give orders and offer his forthright opinions to people like Johan Cruyff.
Yeah, he did. And funnily enough, he was always on Cruyff's case, and I think it got to Cruyff a bit, and he once wrote him a letter which he addressed to the prosecutor. So, yeah, good old days.
So when you started coming to Manchester from Rotterdam, did you used to get the ferry over? Because in the 70s and 80s, there weren't a plethora of cheap budget flights like now.
Yeah, the first time I came on my own was in 82, and that was the ferry from Rotterdam to Hull. And then afterwards, I would take the Hook of Holland Heritage ferry. Yeah, that was painful because it was always stormy weather and people were sick on the ferry, and it wasn't nice. No, give me a plane anytime.
So tell us about United support in Holland.
It's huge. I would say it's the biggest, it's probably the biggest foreign team in the Netherlands. They've always had a supporters club. They had one in the 70s. That disappeared in the 80s, but then a new one was founded in the 90s, and they've always had about 300-350 members. Very, very good support.
Robin van Persie is from your home city, Rotterdam.
Yeah, good boy.
You know him?
Yeah. Well, no, not personally, no. But he started with Excelsior, which is the same team that my dad used to play for. So it's got to be good.
And Excelsior are like the third team of Rotterdam. I'm not doing them a disservice by saying that, am I? Behind Sparta Rotterdam and Feyenoord.
Oh, no. In fact, in a way, we're proud of it. Personally, I think it's funny that when I say I follow Manchester United, people say, oh, how boring is that? Because everybody supports Manchester United. And then sometimes they ask me, what is your favourite team in the Netherlands? And, yeah, I would always say Excelsior, given the family ties and all that. And then they say, oh, how boring is that? Because no one watches Excelsior.
So it's a contrast, but when they say you follow United, you actually follow them. You don't sit at home watching on television. You travel everywhere.
Yeah, I try to see as many games as I can. And
so for you, this, a game in Leverkusen, is as good as being a home game as almost any, apart from playing in, you know, Eindhoven or Amsterdam.
Yeah. This is an hour and a half it took me to drive down here, so it's very good. So now it's not the most exciting place to go to, but it's easy for me, so.
How do you feel about United this season?
not very good so far, are we? And I think the Ferguson magic has gone now. So now it's going to be a tough job for David Moyes to get us back in a winning mood.
Okay, hello, my name is Frank Linder. I'm a support liaison officer here in Leverkusen.
So, Frank, we're stood in the away end here at Leverkusen. There's a section of rail seats which holds between 1,900 and 2,200 for a Bundesliga game. Can you just explain how the rail seats work at Bundesliga matches?
Oh, you have to know. I'm working here more than 10 years. And with this seating, there was no problem, or with the standing. It's for the away fans here, and I know they are coming to Leverkusen, and they have to organize their own sector here. When you are an active fan scene, you go to the away sector and use the first rows because you are very interested in to support your team. A row higher, there's the father and son who wants to watch the game and wants to celebrate their players, not my players.
Why do German supporters like to stand, and why do clubs allow it?
It's historic. It was always so that you go to football and you're standing. So this is the only reason.
Does it aid the atmosphere?
It helps for the atmosphere, yes. No, okay. So you have emotions by a game, when you win or when you lose. But it's always you're part of the citizen, and you're not an asshole and makes dumb things.
And when people stand in these sections, which can be converted for European games with the rail seats, how much does it cost? How much does a ticket cost to watch Bayer Leverkusen against Manchester United?
It's not so expensive. As a season ticket holder, you have a good price. I know it's under 20 euros for when you have a season ticket with Model 2. That means all other games included. When you buy a ticket at the ticket sale, when it starts, and in my north area where our supporters are standing, singing and shouting, you have to pay your student 21 euros, or full price is 23 euros. Yes, that's.
And if you have a season ticket, it works out cheaper.
Yes, when you have a season ticket, it's cheaper. I think it's a bonus program like every club has it.
How much is a season ticket at Bayer Leverkusen to stand?
Season ticket, it starts at 160 when you're a student or have no work, and when you have no reduce, you have to pay 180 for a season ticket for a standing area.
And that includes European games, or they're separate?
You have a reservation for all the games.
And so 180 euros is a full price ticket to stand up, which is 10 euros per game.
Yes, it's okay. It's a good price.
It's more than okay. It's a fantastic price.
It's fantastic.
Hi there, my name's John Darch. I'm the operator of the Safe Standing Roadshow, which supports the Football Supporters Federation's Safe Standing campaign.
So John, we're walking behind the one end of the Bay Arena in Leverkusen. You must have been to Germany several times and seen how the safe standing works over here. There's been a bit of momentum towards safe standing in the UK in the last few months, not least from Manchester United. Ed Woodward made very favourable comments about it. What's your take on the current state of safe standing, and can you see a time when it will be implemented?
I think we're getting ever closer, and one of the things that's helped to get us there is the fact that clubs like United are starting to say, yes, we're interested. You know, in the Football League, 55 out of 72 clubs voted at their AGM in May to have their league executive look at how trials could be run. And I know a national newspaper did a ring around of all the clubs in the Premier League a little while ago and found that 19 out of 20 were either very, very keen or at least not against the idea. So I think, yeah, the day when we're going to have one or two trials or one or two clubs simply say, we're going to do it, is not so far away.
Tell me about your roadshow. How does that work?
I have four of these German Varios Itza rail seats built onto a sort of small little grandstand, and that disassembles and goes in the back of a white van, and we drive around the country whenever a fan group or a football club say, you know, can you show us what it's all about? Take it there, assemble it, and I give my spiel explaining how it works and how wonderfully safe standing at rail seats will be.
And how does it work, and how safe are they?
Completely safe. Because you have a rail, waist-high rail, along every row of seats, you can't fall forward, you can't get pushed from behind. You've got your own sort of area to jump up and down, get as excited as you like when you're night at school and next goal, and you can't hurt yourself and you can't push anybody else over. So completely, completely safe. And then on the occasions when the club plays in the Champions League, the seat part gets put down, and so that part of the area of the ground is compliant with UEFA regulations, just like the rest of the stadium.
You mentioned lower league clubs. What about the Premier League? What's been the reaction from them? I noticed that Aston Villa made some favourable comments. In Scotland, I saw that Celtic had spoken about it as well, and more recently Manchester United. Although there's nothing concrete there, it represented a complete shift in policy from Manchester United.
Yeah, that was very refreshing to see, because before that, we had six clubs in the Premier League who were openly in support, saying we think there should be trials done. With all due respect to the likes of Aston Villa, Sunderland, Swansea, Cardiff, Crystal Palace and Hull City, that there weren't any of the really big four or five clubs that have said publicly, we're interested. And so to have United come out and say, we're interested, that was big news for the campaign, and it has given it a shot in the arm.
What happens next?
There's a variety of things. You could be a case of the Football League or the Premier League going to the Sports Ground Safety Authority, who would in turn go to the Department of Culture, Media and Sport and say, please can ground X or Y do a trial. Alternatively, one club might simply say, well, these things are seats. We're obliged to provide seats for our fans. We're going to provide this sort of seat. And just do it.
I'm seeing now clubs liaising with stewards and local authorities and turning a blind eye in terms of, you've bought a seat, you should be sat, but if you stand, we're not going to do anything about it. Recently at Old Trafford there was a singing section. I was in that singing section. It was brilliant. You had good stewards in there, you had a great atmosphere. It just worked. And the fans knew not to take the piss. And the stewards knew as well. And there wasn't that authoritarian, sit down now, you've been stood up for 20 seconds. And it created a better atmosphere for all. Not just for the fans, but for the stewards as well.
And every club could do that now, formally, because the law only says the stadium must provide all seats. The law does not say the fans must sit down. That's only in the ground regulations, and it's within the gift of the clubs to waive that regulation. The club that does that most openly and most formally are Cardiff City. Their Canton Stand, they advertise it as a standing area. They've had a 14-page document done on the way they operate that stand safely. Their council is fully aware of it. Their police force are fully aware of it. The Premier League is fully aware of it. It is operated as a standing area. Every other club in the Premier League could do that tomorrow if they wanted to. And to make their fans in such an area even safer, they really ought to put in rail seats as well.
So United are doing nothing wrong?
Nobody is breaking the law by allowing fans in their stadium to stand.
I was at Cardiff on Sunday. I was really impressed. I don't like a lot of the actions of their owner. I don't like the blue to red. What I did like was pictures underneath the stand showing the club's history. Not just glory, glory pictures from the last 2 years going up, but pictures of empty terraces from Ninian Park in the 50s, 60s, 70s. A picture of Bob Marley playing at Ninian Park in front of 300 people. Disgraceful turnout for Bob Marley in 1975. But I felt that Cardiff do a lot of things right.
Yeah, they do. They do. Like you say, I haven't got the time of day for the owner either, and I was pleased to hear the fans singing, "We're Cardiff City, we'll always be blue." But yeah, in terms of recognising that fans like to watch their football in a certain way and finding ways to be able to do that, it's great.
This is gaining momentum, isn't it? This isn't just anarchish supporter groups now saying, we'd like this to happen. There's real impetus here.
Yeah, that's the big difference. It's now the clubs that are saying we want it to happen as well. It's not just anarchist supporter groups. And when we've got clubs like United saying we're interested, up in Scotland, Celtic very, very keen. You know, it's going to happen. There will be rail seats in a stadium in the United Kingdom inside 18 months.
And football will be the better for it, because the seats will be cheaper and the atmosphere will be better. It's just a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer. And even if the seats aren't cheaper, it'll mean that those fans who currently stand up are no longer being just tolerated, no longer having to feel like they're naughty children for breaking the rules, but they'll be appreciated and welcomed and valued for the vibrancy and the noise they bring to the stadium.
Finally, when I mentioned safe standing in the past on Twitter, for example, the overwhelming reaction is positive. Occasionally, I will get somebody saying it will never be introduced because of Hillsborough. It's nothing to do with Hillsborough.
Absolutely not. That was all about appalling crowd management. Had there been rail seats in the Leppings Lane end, nobody would have lost their life that day.
There's 3 hours to kick off in Leverkusen, and I'm with Duncan Drasdow, who's come over from Manchester. Why have you come over, Duncan?
Well, obviously I come to see United play by Leverkusen, but in particular we've come to the ground early because we wanted to have a look at the rail seats, and it was arranged, we were invited by the support liaison officer from Bayer Leverkusen, Frankie, great guy, to come and have a look at the rail seats that we're going to be going into in the away section. And obviously this is about the safe standing debate that's going on at the moment. And so we really wanted to go and, well, bring the press in there as well, really, and sort of get some understanding of how good the facilities are and how simple it is to create a much safer environment where people can choose to stand if they want to. But there's still seats there, and so it still qualifies as an all-seater, you know, section. But it means that people can stand safely without that problem that you get where basically you've got the seat back at your shin level for the row in front of you as a sort of tripping hazard. In this situation, you've got a rail that goes across at kind of waist level, and you know that's really why we've come early to the stadium. Too fucking long an answer, sorry.
Don't swear.
You'll cut that out.
United have changed the tune with regards to safe standing. You're the head man at Must. You've met Ed Woodward yourself. What have you made of him so far?
Well, I think the overriding feeling is that he's very open to new ideas and to new relations, you know, and doing something progressive, really. I mean, obviously, we are waiting to see what actually comes out of the sort of discussions, and I don't really want to say anything that would compromise the sort of confidentiality of the meeting, if you like, but I would certainly say that we talked about safe standing in particular, but mainly we talked about supporter relations and how there's a benefit if the supporters feel a part of the club rather than feeling like it's a business that's selling them tickets and not really, you know, being part of it. But obviously we recognise that the ownership is an issue that's going to take some time to play out, really. But on the safe standing area, I would say he was very positive about it, very interested, and particularly interested, I think, in the idea that you could put rail seats in at this time under the current legislation. Whether that translates, again, we'll have to wait and see.
What's the current situation with Must?
Current situation with Must? Well, I mean, we're at 200,000 members now. We are looking at developing our sort of global membership, essentially because we believe that the way that we can actually get some influence over the club is by having a mass membership across the globe. You know, United's valuation is based on that huge membership, and so we have to reflect that. 10% of the shares are now on the stock exchange in New York, but obviously not really attractive because they don't really give us any influence at this stage. And so what we're interested in at the moment is both building that network of supporters, but also then seeing if we can negotiate with the club towards a kind of almost a roadmap towards some better ownership model. Which would involve the supporters having a significant stake and ideally nobody having a single control of the club, no single ownership.
When you look at the German model, what strikes you?
I think what's really interesting, you talk about the 50% plus one ownership model, is for me it's almost like that's getting towards the optimum model because it's got the sort of mutual aspect of it, with the fans having or the club having the members of the club having control ultimately, but they also have the opportunity to have a commercial investment, and so you can get clubs that have, you know, effectively 49% ownership by commercial interests. And what that means is you've got that commercial driver there, you've got the sort of entrepreneurial engine, if you like. And I think that's important, because I think that's what maybe doesn't quite work in the Spanish model, Barcelona in particular. You know, a lot of us talk about the Spanish model and love the romance of that. But I see
it close at hand. I think it's flawed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly, I mean, the thing that's always struck me is the presidential election model, which is going to create politics within the fan base and not necessarily be the best solution for the club, because they are going to promise things rather than, you know, doing what's best for the club. It's about getting elected, really, and we all see how that works. And so for me, I don't like the idea. I mean, I would never like Musk to have control of the club in any way, because I know that immediately that would mean that lots of people wanted to get control of Musk, and then you have politics and infighting and all the problems that we've seen. And so for me, it's about diverse ownership amongst the fan base, along with the commercial ownership as well. You know, when I say commercial, I mean an investor who's got a commercial interest, so they're going to drive the commercial interest of the club. But what ultimately happens is that the commercial interests do kind of take control largely, except that if it goes too far or it goes in the wrong direction or they do things that are against the interests of the club, the fans can outvote them. And so they know that all the time. So the board is always aware of those who's got the actual ultimate power. And I think that's the way it works largely in Germany. The fans aren't involved in day-to-day decisions, and we don't want that. But what they have is they have the influence to change things if things are going badly wrong. And so they still can operate commercially. And I suppose, I mean, the only thing I would say in terms of the 50% plus one model versus what sort of feels right to me at the moment, anyway, is I kind of feel like having a more direct ownership. So if you've got... if you actually own shares in the club yourself, I think that's a kind of closer feeling to feeling you're part of the club. And, you know, the equivalent would be United to the German model would be that Musk would be the members club, or not necessarily Musk, but a members club owns, you know, 51% or whatever of the shares, and then you're just a member of that club. And I think that's a proxy ownership, which can work, but I actually think that there's an argument for actually feeling like you own a stake directly in the club. And so you have the same shares, you have the same ownership as the commercial guys, but you have a different motivation, really, because it's about loving the club and feeling close to it. But I think it's good that you actually have exactly the same ownership as the commercial people, because then it is, we're all in this together, and we feel it. You know, we all have put our money in, and if dividends are paid, dividends are paid. But obviously for most fans, they'd probably want to reinvest that into the club or take it as more shares as a sort of dividend reinvestment thing. But yeah, I mean, I just think there's a balance there. It's almost a hybrid model, a new model PLC, you might say, but a kind of hybrid model that you're taking the best from the mutual and the best from the capitalist model, and bringing those to... And I think football, obviously, is a different kind of business, so, you know, maybe it's the perfect organisation stroke business for that kind of model, you know, where you have bringing in the mutual and the commercial aspect of it.
As it stands at the moment, the Glazer family own the club. They could just say to you, you can talk what you like, we hold the keys to this house. Where do you see the future going with Must and with the Glazers?
Yeah, I mean, I totally accept that. I think that after the flotation in New York, it really secured their position, because they now have no financial pressure. If they need to get some money, essentially they can sell some more shares. So there isn't really any logical argument for conducting any kind of war of attrition. And so I think it's about, you know, it literally is about what are the win-wins here. What is the best model for Manchester United? That there, you know, I do think there are potentially ways that we can actually progress, which are better for the fans and better for the club and better for the current owners, you know, and it will involve, obviously, from our point of view, them exiting or at least selling off their majority ownership and giving control or an influence to the supporters. And at the moment, there's no point in us buying the shares because we won't get any significant influence. So it's about really making that argument, and I think there's a great argument to be made there, you know. And I think they can see that you know, they could be releasing ownership in return for obviously selling their shares. And whether they exit fully or partially or whatever, you know, I would look at every option. You know, I'm not somebody who would say, you know, that it's a personal thing and we're just anti-lasers for the sake of anti-lasers. If it's better for the club and it's better for the fans, then you've got to put aside any kind of personal feelings about what's happened in the past, to me anyway. So, I think it's about exploring what, you know, we've now got a situation where the chief executive of the club is talking, and so let's explore it and see whether there's any progress can be made. You know, it may be that there can't be, but I believe there is a win-win there. You know, I do think that that model that we talked about in terms of the, you know, the kind of 50% plus one style of model is the optimum model. And so I think that it actually not is better just for the supporters, but I think it's better commercially for the club. I think it'd be better for the sponsorship, it'd be better for TV rights, you know, better atmosphere, all of those aspects. And just essentially, if you want to put it in a business sense, it's customer satisfaction. The customers are going to be more satisfied. The fans are going to be more satisfied because they feel they're being valued and their loyalty is being reciprocated by the club. At the moment, we feel like customers of a private business who is basically trying to screw us for as much as they can. And so I think it's that contrast in relationships. I mean, one of the points I made, I'll just say this quickly, but why is it that United fans going to the stadium would rather spend their money in a private business at St Platt's or the Trafford or the Bishop Blaise than inside the stadium? Why are they doing that? And that is a question that the chief executive of Manchester United is interested in understanding, and I think he does understand it, and it's because of that relationship breakdown. It just feels wrong. And so, crazily, people would rather give their money to somebody who's nothing to do with United than give it to what ought to be their football club, because they don't really think it's going for the club, or they feel like the club is holding them to ransom. So that's that disconnect, the breakdown in relationship that, you know, I believe can be solved, you know, if you get the right ownership model.
My name is Oliver Klein. I live in the near of Düsseldorf, and I am a supporter of Manchester United since 1991. I was born in 1985.
Why United?
United, why? Because of my father works in Manchester for about 20 or 30 years by RWE, or maybe, you know, Silent Power. And when he left the plane, I just picked up the newspapers and saw the results. And when you're a kid, you just see the results and get a fan. And I'm still a fan.
So your dad was bringing English newspapers back from Manchester, and you were seeing...
And sweets.
Yeah. And you were seeing the
results.
Which type of players were playing? Which names?
Cantona, Beckham, Neville, the Neville brothers, Cole, York, Sheringham.
And then you followed them ever since. And you watch games on TV? Have you been to Old Trafford?
I have been to Old Trafford 2 times when I was 9 years old in Manchester against Liverpool. And I was 9 years old. I don't know. I don't really know.
You have plans to go again?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. I'm a member since 5 years yet. Yeah.
And what do your German friends say when you support an English team, when there's so many great
teams? They hate me. Yeah.
They say, why don't you support
all I have to say, they
Fortuna
hate me.
Or...
No, I'm in Germany. I don't know how to explain it in English, because I don't know the word. Local patriot.
Yeah.
To Fortuna Düsseldorf,
yeah.
And Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Okay.
Of course I am, but my heart belongs to Manchester United.
The game's 29 minutes old in Leverkusen, and United are 2-0 up. The first goal came from Antonio Valencia. Great movement involving Shinji Kagawa, who sprinted three quarters of the length of the pitch. And the second one was an in-swinging free kick, and I cannot quite see who got his head on it. It might be an own goal. It might be Chris Smalling. I think it was an own goal. But United are 2-0 up away by Leverkusen. Massively impressive, especially given their quality. Not that it's shown against United this season, but the atmosphere is really good, not just from the home fans, but the couple of thousand United fans are actually out singing the home fans, and they're singing Jingle Bells, jingle all the way. They're buzzing, they're fueled by warm wine, hot wine, which they've been drinking at the Christmas market in Cologne and Dusseldorf most of the day. And German football is rightly credited with having a great atmosphere inside the stadium, but United fans are actually the loudest at the moment. A really impressive display on the field and off the field from United fans. 2-0 up after half an hour, this is brilliant. United won 5-0 in the end, the most impressive performance away in Europe for a long time. The biggest for a long time as well. After the game, I spoke to Johnny Evans.
Oh, I mean, it was good atmosphere. I think you always find with the German games, you know, they're great stadiums, compact stadiums, you know, and they really get behind their team, and I think that brings the best out of their own supporters as well.
2,000 United fans travelled over. They've been in Dusseldorf and Cologne enjoying themselves in the day. I thought it was brilliant there tonight.
It was. It was an unbelievable atmosphere, and I mean, I think, you know, I'm glad we've managed to score a good number of goals for them. You know, it's hard with all the travelling and the expense of it, but you know, I think especially Germany. I think they like coming to these German countries with the good beer and that.
Especially at Christmas time. How much of a difference does it make when you're playing? How much difference does it make when you've got the fans singing away like that?
I mean, it makes a big difference. I mean, obviously Old Trafford's a real fortress for us, but you know, our away fans are unbelievable, and it's something we're very proud of. And you know, the way they get behind us, you know. They're absolutely crazy, to be fair.
Some of the songs tonight were definitely crazy. Nice that they were name-checking Bill Foulkes as well.
Obviously, you know, I think that's one good thing, you know, especially the way they remember every single player that's played for, you know, that's made an impact on this club. And, I mean, you think of all the songs they sing. I mean, it's hard for us on the pitch, but you know, sometimes if you're on the bench and that, you can, you know, you listen to the songs they're singing, and they nearly go through every single player that they've had a song for. I think someone must have a log of every single song, and then just start the playlist.
There is, I mean, tonight it was Ole Gunnar, it was Eric, and then Nicky Butt had his songs.
Oh, yeah,
and if they see someone, like if they see Roy Keane, then they all start singing.
Exactly. It's fantastic. Well. I mean, like I say, we're very proud of our away support.
Happy with your performance?
Yeah, I thought we played really well. Obviously, the goals, you know, can sometimes make a performance look better than it is, but I thought tonight we were fantastic, you know, the way we counter-attacked.
And Tottenham?
Tough game, you know. We've had a few good victories over there, you know, in the last couple of years. I think was it a draw last season. So we know it's going to be a tough game. They've obviously lost heavy at the weekend. They've spent a lot of money on a lot of players. So you know, we're maybe going into the unknown a wee bit.
Paddy, just 2 seconds. What do you make it a performance? All right, can I have 1 minute?
That's the best performance I've seen from a United side in a long, long time in Europe. I thought it was magnificent. I mean, you come to a German side, you're second in the league, you haven't lost here, or, which is last March or something like that. They've only dropped points to Bayern Munich, which was a draw. But it's a great performance, absolutely fantastic. Hopefully this is the start of things. I think when you get great results like that in Europe, it frightens other teams. Other teams think, boy, what a result that is.
Who particularly impressed you tonight?
It would be a shame to pick MD. I know Rooney was outstanding, but I thought Kagger was terrific as well. But it's a shame to pick out MD. I thought the whole performance, the back four were brilliant. I thought, and once you've got a back four that's not going to lose any goals, if you watch that game again, they never get through at all. The only time they get past United is when they cross the ball into the box. They couldn't get through the back four at all.
The United end was really loud tonight, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Well, I couldn't see them, Andy. We were a bit, but they were really. When you get a performance like that, what would you expect for the crowd to be loud?
And they've been in Dusseldorf and Cologne all day.
It wouldn't be alcohol related.
No. What it was, they saw that beautiful cathedral in Cologne.
I was in there. I went in today. I said a prayer. Maybe that was why we won 5-0.
But that inspired them to be fine in voice during the game. None of them have touched any beer or any wine.
I don't believe that for 1 minute.
Tottenham, big game.
Big game, Tottenham as well. Tottenham's another. I mean, that's a great result. Tottenham playing Thursday night as well, so away from home. So you hope that this is the start of something. We get a result, Tottenham are back in line again.
So that's it for this week's United We Stand podcast. Hope you enjoyed the trip to Germany and the various guests who I spoke to along the way. We've sent the new United We Stand to the printers, and it's out against Everton at Old Trafford next week. It'll be on sale outside the ground. If you want to subscribe either to a digital or printed edition, go to our website, uwsonline.com. Postal subscribers will be getting theirs nice and early. We'll be sending them out before the mag goes on sale. And we'll be back next week with another edition of our podcast. Until then, goodbye.